In today's lecture, we are going to have a look at how customs enforce compliance with the VAT legislation. We are going to start by looking at the way customs use the control visit procedure to monitor the operation of VAT by the taxable person. Customs officers will periodically visit taxable persons. These visits will be by prior appointment, although customs obviously reserve the power to enter and search premises on a warrant granted by a magistrate.
New rules were introduced from the 1st of April 2009 to bring HMRC's powers regarding compliance within the same statutory framework for income tax, corporation tax, CGT and VAT. It remains to be seen how much practical difference this will make for VAT, as HMRC's powers in this area were already more extensive than for other taxes.
In the past, registered traders could expect their first control visit within 3 years of registration. Visits are now more targeted, and a low-risk trader may not have his first visit for many years. Traders who receive cash takings or work in a complicated area might be regarded as high risk, and as such, they can expect more regular visits from customs. Control visits will vary in duration depending on the perceived risk factor and the size and complexity of the business. In addition, a trader who sends in a late VAT return, or VAT returns that are incorrect or inconsistent, can also expect to be visited more frequently than would perhaps otherwise be the case. The control visit usually takes place on the business premises, and customs will inspect the accounting records of the trader. They will also test the accuracy of VAT returns that have been submitted so far. A control visit cannot be regarded as an audit. The fact that a control officer does not discover any errors does not equate with giving the business a clean bill of health. The purposes of a control visit are wide-ranging. The primary objective of the control visit is to ensure that the full amount of VAT due has been properly accounted for, hence the check of records and the check of VAT returns previously submitted. So the records of the business and also the activities carried on by the business will be scrutinized by the control officer. The control officer will also discuss various aspects of the business with the taxable person. If a trader uses the opportunity afforded by the control visit to seek the advice of customs on particular issues, then the trader must ensure that any advice on which he is going to rely is confirmed in writing by customs. The control officer will also discuss any VAT problems that the business may be experiencing, and perhaps may offer advice on how to cope with these. Once again, such advice needs to be in writing. Finally, the control officer will highlight any errors that have been found during the control visit, and will explain what happens next, and how the business should act to correct them. If under-declarations of VAT do come to light during the visit, or maybe if excessive amounts of input tax have been claimed, then the control visit will be followed by the issue of an assessment, and perhaps also interest and penalties may be charged. A control visit will normally take place at the trader's main place of business. This is so that the officer can not only examine the business records, but can also have a look at the business activities carried on. All of the records which the trader is obliged by law to keep should be made available. If any records are not kept at the main premises, customs should be so informed at the time that the appointment is made for the control visit. Customs can then outline which of the remote records the control visit officer will need to examine. Where records are held on computer, the trader is obliged to give the officer assistance in assessing those records. A taxable person is liable to civil penalties if he fails to provide information or documents demanded, or if he fails to retain records that he is required by law to keep. The person who is responsible for dealing with all the VAT affairs of the business should also be available whilst the customs officer is conducting the control visit. The trader's accountant, or maybe another professional advisor, may also be there if the trader feels this would be helpful. The particular procedures followed during the control visit vary according to the nature of the business, but if lots of cash transactions are carried out in the business, then it is likely that a gross profit calculation or a markup computation will be carried out by the control officer. Control officers use a number of techniques to test the credibility of output tax figures, and especially as regards retailers selling goods, quite a popular credibility check is the markup computation. A markup computation makes use of the known value of purchases, which of course can be obtained from the tax invoices which have been retained as evidence of an input tax credit, and also uses the profit margin markups that are made on each of the various types of goods sold. The customs officer would use this information to effectively estimate the value of sales in a period, and hence the value of output tax that should have been accounted for. This will be compared to the actual output tax accounted for, and if a large difference occurs, then perhaps a further investigation will be carried out. It is probably easiest to understand how a markup computation works if I go through an illustration with you. So let's have a look at Alex. Alex sells children's toys, which are all taxed at the standard rate of VAT. His average rate of markup is 40%. He estimates that 5% of his stock is lost due to shopliftings, theft, etc. In January, he has a sale where approximately 50% of his stock is sold at an average markup of only 10%. Purchases for the test period total £50,000, which excludes VAT. Output tax declared for the test period was £7,250. How credible is the output tax declared? The markup computation for the test period will start off by taking the purchases in the test period and adjusting them for theft, shoplifting, etc. Now, in our example, there were £50,000 worth of purchases in the test period, of which about 5% would normally be pilfered. So, £2,500 is deducted from our £50,000 purchases to give us £47,500 of purchases in the test period. Now, the next part of the calculation is to take these purchases and assume that they are all sold. So we are working out effectively hypothetical sales for the test period. Now, we are told that in our test period, 50% of our stock is sold with a 40% markup, and 50% is sold in the sale period with only a 10% markup. So we will take 50% of our £47,500 of purchases and multiply it by 1.4, i.e. our 40% markup, to give us our sales in that test period of £33,250. The other 50% of purchases in the period we will multiply by 1.1 to give us a 10% markup, and hence sales of £26,125. So total sales in the test period are £59,375. Now, the next thing to do is work out the VAT that should have been accounted for on these sales. So, £59,375 at 17.5% says that £10,391 output tax should have been paid over to customs, but Alex only actually declared, i.e. paid over, £7,250 of output tax. There is a £3,141 difference, and that, on these figures, is fairly significant. So with a result like that, the control officer will probably investigate Alex further and perhaps raise an assessment on him for what he would assume to be the missing output tax figure. A customs officer will issue an assessment where it appears that a tax return has not been submitted, or if it has been submitted, it is incomplete or incorrect. The assessment must be made to the best of the commissioner's judgment. The underlying phrase basically comes from an important case, Van Berkel versus CCE. The phrase effectively means that customs officers must consider fairly all the material put before them by the trader, and that is what they must base their decision on. That decision must also be a reasonable decision. So long as there is some material on which the customs officer can act, however, they are not required to make any further investigation. So in other words, the customs officer will use the information given to him to raise his assessment, but doesn't actually have to delve further to find out if the figures he is coming up with are precisely accurate. A recent tribunal case gives a good example of using best judgment when raising an assessment. Mr. Singh, a firework wholesaler, was visited by customs, who examined his purchase records. They concluded that he had recorded all of his purchases accurately. However, they did not carry out a markup exercise. Instead, they made an assessment based on a month's till rolls. The tribunal concluded from the evidence that Mr. Singh's till had been used as an all-purpose calculator. Apart from recording actual sales, it was used to calculate the value of customer selections prior to sale, to calculate the value of a potential sale for telephone inquiries, to calculate the value of faxed orders prior to sale, for training exercises, for calculating the total value of purchases, for calculating bankings, and to calculate sandwich orders. Mr. Singh explained that certain entries in the till rolls could not have been sales. They were too large. His customers were local newsagents and grocers and would not have a license to transport the quantities of fireworks implied by the size of the figures on the till rolls. The tribunal noted that a markup exercise would have produced figures very close to those on Mr. Singh's VAT returns. Customs were aware that the till was used other than for recording sales and were happy with Mr. Singh's purchase records. They also knew his markup and so had not, in the tribunal's opinion, used best judgment in making their assessment. There are time limits to be observed for the raising of an assessment by customs. An assessment must be raised by the later of 2 years after the end of the prescribed accounting period in question. Just to remind you, the prescribing accounting period is the VAT return period, or 1 year after evidence justifying the raising of an assessment comes to light. So, the later of these two dates is the last date on which customs can raise an assessment, but we have to bear in mind that there is also an overall time limit. This overall time limit for the issue of an assessment is 4 years after the end of the prescribed accounting period, or when an individual has died, not later than 4 years after his death.
Where an underpayment arises from the deliberate conduct of the person concerned, this time limit is increased to 20 years. Time limits are very important because customs can only raise assessments within the strictly defined periods of time.